Good morning, Steve.
Richie, the first order of business, again, another strong showing, right, last week?
Yeah, we ended up going 3-1, I believe, yep. And that was pretty good. And, it just shows we didn't have to pick all games. One thing that certainly people make the mistake is trying to play too many games. It's the same as horse players betting too many races.
Yeah.
You just can't. It's very hard to have an opinion on every single event. So we were able to cherry pick four games in the tournament and went 3-1. So that was good. Hopefully we can keep it going.
Well, that basically for the overall, you go the first two weekends 3-1. Through the Sweet 16, and you were 4-0 going into the first couple of rounds. So you're sitting 7-1, heading with three games left. It's going to be hard to give back what you've already won.
Well, that'll keep some people staying till the end of the show to listen to the segment.
Right?
That's great.
We can dangle it. I'm going to pause for a second on what you just said, because it's actually a terrific sidebar or conversation point with what we are going to have to deal with on Saturday. You've got this 14 race card at Gulfstream. You've got a 13 race card at Oaklawn, and I think a 12 race card at Turfway. So this is nuts. You got 40 races almost, and then frankly, if you fold in the Excelsior in New York, you can consider the cross country pick five. The cross country pick five is frankly going to be tough to resist. With the Excelsior and the races from Oaklawn, essentially, those are the group of races in the cross country. In fact, I'll give it to you: the Carousel, which starts at 3:19, then the Excelsior from New York, 5:13, the Oaklawn Mile, the Fantasy, and the Arkansas Derby. That's the cross country pick five. So there's 39 races at the three prep sites, plus let's say the Excelsior. So it's 40 races. And how many pick fives, how many pick fours, countless pick threes. Being able, Rich, to zero in and find your spots and essentially plot out your Saturday. What's the recommendation? I mean, and how would you approach a day that's that's somewhat overwhelming here in terms of volume?
Well, using my background from writing the book Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, certainly I talk about the fact that if you have a budget, then you pretty much know, how much you're going to invest in something like that. I know myself personally, I've been playing an awful lot of two horse and two race bets, daily doubles and exactas. It's a high percentage bet that you can collect a lot of. But if you're going to, look at playing pick fives, which are an outstanding bet, if you can, connect the dots. For me, I know when I handicap it, I usually try to find at least one race in the sequence that I can single. And if that's the case, then I can try to work around the others and have a reliable ticket. I'm not a huge bettor in the sense that, I see some tickets that people post on, Twitter and Facebook where they're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Well, that is not the way that I personally gamble, or that I'm suggesting to, newcomers or relative neophytes in the game to gamble like that. But, I know people that have a smaller budget. I make a recommendation of something like keeping the ticket within $50 or so. And if you cannot put a ticket together that's within that limit, then I would tell some of my people to pass. But then, a lot of your listeners certainly have more experience, bigger bankroll, and they're more than happy to put in a $200-$300 ticket. So it just depends on your circumstances, Steve. And that's the way I kind of look at it. I'm not a big player as far as putting in hundreds of dollars size tickets.
I bring it up especially because of what has transpired on these prep Saturdays. so far this year. I mean, and we're still relatively early. We're basically rounding out the opening quarter of the year. And even looking back at Fairgrounds this past weekend, you did have a couple of square enough prices on those two turf races in the late pick five, but the big prices came in the Louisiana bred races, which can be confounding. I mean, even people that we had conversations with last week, like Chad Schexnader and Frank McGoey, you know, they're plugged in on, you know, the local aspect, and you know they struggled with that middle portion of the day when you had these unusual horses win the three Louisiana bred races. At least the Crescent City Oaks and the Crescent City Derby. I mean, those were the winner of the Costa Rising was not, you know, shocking. These days have been consistently, for the most part, very chalky. And at a glance, the Gulfstream card feels a little bit that way as well. So I think you've got to really go through and try to find some key horses and build off of those and cherry pick these sequences. I my tendency is to, you know, to kind of pick a card and run the whole card. Turfway looks to have the most interesting competitive day, but it's also a place, Rich, that a lot of people are completely flummoxed by the results there and are intimidated by the synthetic and you know, won't necessarily have a feel for. So it's a kind of a challenging scenario in terms of approaching a mammoth day of racing on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying about Turfway. In the days when I was there, we did not have a tapita surface. We had regular dirt, and to some degree, it was pretty formful in the years that I was at Turfway. But I know people have, you know, talked about the tapita, whether it's at the Gulfstream Park or at Woodbine or at the Turfway, and they have some issues with it. But personally, I actually like the tapita because I kind of treat it more like grass racing, and you know, when I watch the signal at night with the Turfway Park, I know exactly what you're saying and what other fans are saying. Sometimes horses come out of the woodwork that I take a look at a big long shot that wins. I say, I just can't get to this horse.
Yeah.
You know, so as far as that goes, I can understand exactly the thought process. And if you're trying to put together a pick five, a lot of times it's not actually trying to pick the winner, but you're trying to pick losers, horses you don't think have a chance, and if one of those son of a guns actually pops up and wins at 20 or 30 to 1, well, obviously that kills the ticket. Those are very difficult horses to come up with.
Now, the way in which, and I haven't really plotted this, so that'll come tonight, and also I want to be able to look at a Thoroughgraph and fold that in, and there's pedigree work to do with these maiden races, particularly at Turfway. They're, you know, the front half of the card has got, I think, four of the first five are maidens. Yeah, one, two, three. Yeah, four, the first, second, and the fourth and fifth. So if you're interested in the front half of the card before the allowance sixth kind of leads you into the sequence from that point, you know, the Latonia and the Rushaway and, you know, everything else that comes with it, the Animal Kingdom, the Kentucky Cup Classic, the sort of reborn Kentucky Cup Classic, which was a big race at Turfway years ago. And it's sort of seems like it's back on the upswing. And then the Bourbonette Oaks. It's funny. It's one of my favorite names for whatever reason. And I never was a big bourbon drinker, Rich, but I've always liked the Bourbonette Oaks, and I'm glad that they don't tinker with it. The other one that I always liked is at River Downs, the Bassinet.
Oh yeah. And the male part is called the cradle.
The cradle,
the cradle and the bassinet.
The bassinet's better. The bassinet though I like. I don't. That's kind of funny. And you know, if you go to what, from your Turfway days. Have you and I? I must have brought Walt's hitching post up with you before.
Oh my goodness! Actually, I don't think you and I have ever talked about it, but certainly that was a famous place to eat. Well, the ribs or Walt's hitching post.
It still is. It is again. You know, it's completely Walt's hitching post is back bigger than ever.
Oh, okay. I haven't been back east in a long time, so I've lost some of the history over the course of time. But go ahead. I'm interested to hear about it.
Well, at Walt's in the dining room toward one of the back rooms, they've got those two glass cases. And I mean, there's the memorabilia, the horse memorabilia is all over the place. But they've got a bassinet trophy. It's either a bassinet or a cradle trophy that goes back. It's got to be from maybe the 20s or 30s. That's in one of those cases. Because when Tina and I stopped, one of the best parts about Walt's is that they're open fairly late on the Saturday night after Derby. So if Tina and I get out, you know, at a decent post Derby exodus from the track and get to the car, we can generally, I think we're two out of three the last few derbies of being able to get to Walt's by like 9:30, quarter of 10. But it's so funny, Rich. I had taken Tina to, there was a Montgomery Inn location that was right close by in Florence. And We got off the highway. We got off 71, and we drove in around to where I remembered where I thought we were going. And it place is dark. It had closed, the Montgomery Inn. And so I said to Tina, she was driving actually. I said, "All right, let's go back. Get back on 71." And I'm thinking for a second. And the next exit, I said, "Get off here." And we went down that hill, that long, crazy, winding hill. And I did it strictly on feel. I just said, "Go, take a right and go down this hill." And, and sure enough, we come down the hill, and there's Walt's. And I was so tickled because it was always my favorite of all the great rib joints in and around Cincinnati. You know, between Montgomery Inn and Walt's, there was also the Barn Rib Pit in Gano Alley, that was out of this world. Rusty Staub's favorite.
Oh my goodness! You know, I know the Montgomery Inn. For people who are old enough to remember going back a ways, Ted Gregory was the proprietor of the Montgomery Inn, and he was a big horse racing guy. And we would see him an awful lot at River Downs, an awful lot at Turfway Park, and you would never see him without a cigar sticking out of his out of his mouth. And those ribs are world famous. I remember he used to talk about how Bob Hope and, you know, some celebrities would order the ribs, and he would actually have them packaged and shipped and flown out to locations around the U.S. to people who just had to have it. So when you mentioned Montgomery, it just made me think about Ted Gregory, the late Ted Gregory, and what a character he was in Cincinnati.
You bring up the shipping of Montgomery Inn. Al Davis, before Al Davis passed, and back when the Raiders would win Super Bowls, Al Davis would promise the Raiders, you know, dinner from anywhere, you know, in the country that was their favorite after Super Bowls. And one of their choices one year, might have been when they beat the Eagles in 80, one of their choices was Montgomery Inn is where they wanted to go. And but Montgomery Inn, I now with Walt's back open, Walt's was shuttered for, I guess, 5 or 6 years. And the new owners, I met one of the new owners the last time we went, about four years ago. And now we've been back twice since. And we'll go again after Derby this year. It's so great that Walt's is back. And, you know, it's funny, Rich, for years it was the ribs there. They've gotten more famous in this new version of Walt's they've gotten more famous for their steaks. But the ribs are still great, and that's what that's what I'll order.
Oh, you're making my mouth water already. It's early in the morning for me.
Well, you got plenty of good play. You got plenty of good choices there in Vegas, as it happens. Pretty funny. It's crazy that we went off in this direction. Give us first. Let's get your weekend thoughts. These two semifinal games. You got some angles on these two semifinal games?
Actually, I actually have a pretty strong opinion. I don't know if it's a good opinion yet to really play the games, but I do have a pretty strong opinion on the two games. And the first one was we'll talk about is the Kansas and the Villanova game. I must admit that I have played Villanova through the tournament. They've been extremely good to me and my bankroll, and hopefully some of the listeners out there. But at the end of the game, when the poor kid, I think it was Justin Moore, popped his Achilles in just the last minute of the game. Well, he's out for the season, obviously, and that's a huge blow to the Villanova Wildcats' chances. They don't go very deep in the rotation anyway. They were playing maybe a six man rotation. Like the seventh man would only play 2 or 3 minutes, and so when you lose a key player on a short rotation deck, that means the other kids have to step up, and so someone who hasn't been playing a whole lot's going to have to play. Kansas comes in on a roll. They've actually, I know from listening to some of the experts, they talked about before the tournament started, that Kansas looked like it had the easiest path of the Final Four, and well, it turned out to be true. They pretty much dispatched everybody in pretty good fashion. But the line out here is 4.5. And I think with the injury, I think Villanova is going to have a tough time overcoming it. So I would like Kansas in the spot at the -4.5. I just think even if Villanova puts up a stoic first 20 minutes, the lack of depth and the pressure that Kansas can put on you, it probably would wear down the Villanova Wildcats late. So I prefer Kansas at the -4.5, Steve.
All right. I appreciate particularly the fact that, having ridden one of the teams throughout the first two weekends, that you're willing, that shows betting discipline, that you're not swayed by sentiment or the previous, the previous success that got you here.
Yeah, you've got to look at each game as an independent event. You can certainly rely upon what you see, what your eyeballs show, and what the analytics show as far as the teams involved. But when you lose a key player, this isn't any sport, whether it's basketball, baseball, football, hockey, when you lose one of your best players, it is so hard to overcome. Everybody else has to pick up the slack a little bit. But as I mentioned with Villanova, they had a short bench to start with. Jay Wright was basically using about 7 kids, and that 7th kid was only playing a couple of minutes. Now he's probably going to have to play, instead of 2 or 3 minutes, he's probably going to have to play a dozen to 15 minutes. And if he's not up to it, they're going to expose some weakness in Villanova during those minutes he's on the floor.
Makes sense. Makes perfect sense. All right. Do you have as strong a feel for Duke Carolina, or is there too much? Is this too much emotion packed to play with?
Well, I think it's an interesting game with the dynamics. Obviously, with Coach K, this is his last season. Every game in the tournament has potentially been his last game, and Duke has been able to win and survive. And these two teams, Duke and North Carolina, have an unbelievable history of playing against each other on Tobacco Road, and they've gone back and forth, Dean Smith for all those years and Coach K. But if you look at the progress of the two teams, while Duke has always been among the top 5 teams in rankings throughout the season, and they came in on a high horse, so to speak, North Carolina, if you'd watch them during the course of the year, they had underachieved a good part of the season. And as far as them getting hot, I think the game in the ACC tournament where they played Duke, or maybe it was the last regular season game, when they played at Duke in the last game at Cameron for Coach K, well, they just beat the Duke Blue Devils on the square. It was one of their best games that North Carolina had played all year, and they have jumped on that momentum, and they've kept going and going and going. So I would, in this situation, I would take the points. You know, North Carolina's plus four. They've shown they can beat Duke. If you can beat Duke at Cameron, then you can beat them on a neutral court. So as far as my thought, I would play North Carolina plus the four over Duke in that situation. And maybe even sprinkle in a little bit on the money line. They're like around plus 175, plus 180. So I would sprinkle a little money line just in case they win outright.
That would set up, you know, it seemed that no matter what scenario heading to this Final Four, no matter what, you were going to have, I mean, you got four very storied programs that were coming together. And it's, I think, yeah, no matter what you end up with here, it's still going to be fairly, you know, fairly epic. And I want to go back to, if I'm not mistaken, the one that I saw when Kansas won, they beat Oklahoma. But if I'm right, hasn't there been a Carolina Kansas final as well?
You know, there probably has been. Believe it or not, I think there actually was a Kansas. This year's my age. If I'm not mistaken, I thought there was a Kansas-North Carolina final where I think it was Will Chamberlain actually was playing for Kansas. I don't know if I'm mistaken about that, but I thought there that goes back into the 50s.
Yeah, that absolutely would. And, well, there was Kansas-St. John's in 52. And look at you. Unbelievable. 1957.
Which oh, okay.
1957, North Carolina, with Frank McGuire behind the bench, beat Kansas 54-53 in the old Municipal Auditorium in Kansas City. How about that?
I cannot say I saw the game, but I remember reading about it.
That's unbelievable. good job. And I want to look for a more recent. They certainly had to maybe in a semi. Yeah, Kansas will beat Oklahoma. That was there for that in 88 at Kemper. That was fabulous. We had so much fun. And
that the Billy Tubbs years?
It was
Oklahoma?
Billy. You bet. Speaking of another unlikable coach, there you go. Another guy easy to dislike.
All the people there loved Billy Tubbs. He was a real rascal.
That's an interesting way of describing him. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess any of the other Kansas Carolina championships were they may have beaten each other on the way because Kansas in 08 they beat Memphis in the final with Calipari. Carolina with Roy Williams beat Michigan State and Tom Izzo in 09. So yeah. It's going to be a great weekend on this front. Rich, how about a play? You got a play today? You got a Simo play?
Yeah, I'll give out a couple of horses a little closer to the vest. We'll first go to Oak Lawn Park in the seventh race. I like the number five horse, Roaming Union. This horse only 2-1 the morning line, but you got the Joel Rosario riding for Norm Cassie. Just a real good spot for this horse to get a W there. So the first horse will be number five, Roaming Union in the seventh at Oaklawn. And then it's a second choice on the day. We'll go about two horses. You can go two for two. In race five at Gulfstream Park, it's a mile on the grass. And I like one of the outside horses, number seven, Mystic Lancelot. This is Louis Saez riding for Happy Altar. And I must admit, when I saw this name, I'm more than familiar with Happy Altar. We've crossed paths a couple of times in my previous career. And I was just happy to see he's still alive and kicking and training because he's one heck of a character for people who know Happy Altar. But I'll certainly be rooting for him today on the seven horse, Mystic Lancelot in the fifth.
Mystic Lancelot in the fifth. There you go. The seven, 3-1, and in the seventh at Oaklawn, Norm Cassie, Roaming Union, 2-1, and yes, Happy Altar. Happy Alter is as great a character as we've got in the game. And don't ask him about Muhammad Ali. Just unless you're prepared to for about 2 hours worth of tale regaling. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick. And, of course, next weekend, Rich will be gearing up for Santa Anita's big Derby Oaks Day and much, much more. You find Rich's analysis of Southern California RaceDayLasVegas.com. And, Rich, I appreciate it. The author of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. But, frankly, he's been betting on basketball for not for dummies, but for winners. He's been killing it. Rich, good luck on Saturday, and we'll talk next week.
Hey, sounds good, Stephen. Keep in mind that your listeners that I'm writing edition number two.
Yep.
And if a person's working on their own or with a company or doing something that involves newcomers, I'd love to hear from you for possible inclusion in the book. So just text me or Twitter me or email me or whatever. I'd love to hear from people out there.
There you go. We'll keep reminding everybody as Rich gets closer to submission date for the revised Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. We're going to send you out into the race day. I want to wish our man Gomez today, the Bug Boy. We got the Bug Boy going in the first with Scherzando. Thanks to Gary and Paul. Let's get lucky. And thanks to Tom McCrocklin for that terrific first hour. Tony Black, Tommy Law, Rich Eng. Good luck today, everybody. If you're playing huge weekend preview at the races tomorrow. See you then.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.